Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Javier, do you want to see Dominic or Balor take on the Usos now that the Judgment Day has earned a tag team title shot? Am I more excited than I should be about prison tough Dominic maybe holding gold?
I'll be honest, if Sami Zayn were in the place where Sami Zayn usually is instead of where he is, I think I would have liked to see the three of them interact, because Sami Zayn was on the same level as like a Dominic. That'd be awesome. But Sami Zayn has more important fish to fry at the moment.
Totally.
But yeah, the whole prison thing has been just a trip. The now I know what Martha Stewart feels like.
See, my take on that is that line would have worked 5 years ago. I feel like it might be something one of the writers came up with, and someone had to catch Dominic up on who Martha Stewart was. But I still laughed. I just am worried. I'm worried. It worked with me. I'm worried it didn't resonate with the audience because it didn't get a big crowd reaction. But yeah, that was it was a very good line again, maybe 5 years too late.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Are you saying I'm old, Wade?
No, I'm saying the writers in WWE wrote a line for Dominic, who is maybe too young for that to be believable. But who knows what? Maybe Dominic's into Martha Stewart. I don't know. So the third hour of Raw was like almost entirely the tag team turmoil match. Did you like it? Is that a good way to fill an hour of TV time, Javier? Did that work for you?
Nothing says we're watching a hold pattern a show than a turmoil match of any sort on the show to take up a third of it. But it's fine. It's an entertaining way to pass the time, and the wrestlers that go out there actually go to wrestle, and I love the fact that there's always the one team that almost goes the full hour. If not the full hour, because it's, you know, you usually don't see WWE wrestlers wrestle for that long period of time.
There was a time where Damian Priest, at like the 40, 45-minute mark, looked about as sweaty and tired and near death as Shane McMahon does after 30 seconds under bright lights.
Yep. Yep, he definitely put in the work.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, it was fun. You know, I mean, it was like 48, 49 minutes. I mean, not all of it was exciting. You know, there were some moments in Anderson and Gallows. I think there was a chin lock or headlock by Balor where the crowd started chanting, maybe getting a little restless. You know, it wasn't loaded with star power, but it had some good energy with the Street Profits, who I think were the highlight of the match. Shelton and Zetter were fine. Otis and Gable were fun, kind of in a bit of a babyface role. And it was a creative spot at the end to get Balor injured, so Dominic had to replace him in the match. But yeah, I mean,
by the way, was a good swerve, because the moment they put Dominic in the match, I'm like, okay, this is their out.
Oh, I know. Yes, and I thought it was also a swerve, because I thought they're just gonna disqualify them and then, you know, just either by just give the match gift the match at that point, or else, I don't know. Maybe at that point Ziggler and Ali run out and go, we made up. We're gonna wrestle after all, or bring somebody else back into the match who wasn't in it. So yeah, a lot of things crossed my mind, but it was pretty quick before we found out that Dominic would be taking his spot. Priest, like, you know, Dominic's body language and facial reactions are really fun, and then Ripley kind of slapping Priest like, you shouldn't have done that. No, Dominic's getting the match. And then Dominic's got to play this like, I don't want to do this, but I know I'm on camera, and I'm claiming I'm prison tough, and I'm next to Ripley here, Rhea here, mommy, and so I need to act tough. And all you can see that struggle going on with his body language and facial expression. So a year ago, I would not have expected Dominic to be the highlight of a three-hour episode of Raw early in 2023, but he might have been, Javier. I don't know who else would be competing with him for most entertaining of the night. It certainly wasn't JBL.
No.
Yeah.
Ziggler? Not Ziggler.
No, not Ziggler either.
Not Ziggler, not ever. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah. Because, I mean, the only other thing that was I got to chuckle at was the interaction with Miz, but that was also involving Dominic, though.
Yes, yeah, with a lot of Dominic on this show. So what do you think of the follow-up? Was there anything entertaining that they left on the table in terms of Dominic? I will say this before I throw to you. I'm really glad that Kevin Patrick acknowledged that he heard Dominic only spent a few hours in county jail. Because you want this to be not WWE trying to put one over on the fans. You want it to be Dominic trying to put one over on the fans. Corey Graves going along with it, but Kevin Patrick should be wise to it and be willing to communicate that maybe a little cautiously, you know, given the circumstance. But he's conveying, I heard that maybe it's only in county jail. So I'm glad they introduced that into the mix because that was the punchline, but I'm a little worried that until Patrick pushed that, they weren't really establishing that well enough.
Yeah, and I think it was, at least as far as the people, was it The Miz first brought up, which was my sources tell me that you were just in county jail, and you're here, you're standing in front of me with a $500 flannel shirt. I got a kick out of that. Pretending
like,
you were surrounded by Dementors, which, you know, got the Harry Potter crowd.
He was cosplaying Conan, which was hilarious.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was, it's like when police officers show up on Raw, like, oh, the police are here. And they're like, the Halloween police costume outfits still have the folds in them from being wrapped in plastic for the last year on a shelf. And, you know, they've never been washed and they're still starched. Like, you know, Dominic coming out like super tough. But in reality, like he's in a, you know, expensive, previously unworn flannel, was a great line. I'm trying to remember when if Miz said it first, I guess I'm trying to think if Miz said it first or Grace said it first. I guess Miz was the one who said he was in county jail. But Patrick did bring that up. I'm trying to remember what stage he did, but I'm glad that they both did. And it was Patrick who was pushing back against Corey Graves, during the match too. But yeah, I think Miz was actually the first one to bring that up. So,
and for the live crowd, it was the Miz. So, cause they wouldn't have
heard
Kevin Patrick. So,
yeah, and honestly, it could have been, I could be conflating Miz and Patrick in terms of the order, but I'm glad that Patrick wasn't a co-conspirator in the lie or the exaggeration that Dominic was putting out there. So, I mean, really, just a fun storyline. You know, pro wrestling, I don't say at its best it's fun because that's not true. At its best, there's high stakes and, you know, some big stars, ideally a heel and a face, but oftentimes, you know, it's a face against face and some sort of a dream match too. And the crowd just super in everything. Fighting for a title, fighting for something that matters. But it is fun when something like Dominic comes up and can be this much a part of a show and kind of sneak up on us and be as entertaining as it is. It was fun. So, yeah, did they leave anything else behind in terms of how to tell this fun story with Dominic in prison?
Well, I mean, I don't think so, but wrestling's also, the other thing that wrestling does well is have the smug prick you want to see someone slap the taste out of their mouth. So,
yeah.
So, and then that's definitely the realm he's in. And yeah, I mean, they pretty much went, I hope they don't continue it too long because sometimes that, you run a joke into the ground. So, you know, mention it maybe here and there, but not as, because I mean, you know, Graves went hard on it today. Which is fine, but I could see it get grating if he's going this hard, you know, every single time he's on camera.
Yeah, yep. Is Dominic good enough in the ring to capitalize on this beyond this being sort of a fun little thing that we enjoy for a couple months? Is there anything that's going to hold him back from sustaining some sort of momentum after this with him and Rhea in Judgment Day? Or is this something you think just can be a really fun act throughout 2023 and even beyond?
I mean, it's a mid-tier thing right now, obviously.
Yeah.
What he can do in the ring, he's okay for this kind of story where it's more of a story that you're telling in the ring than actually wanting to wow us with a flashy moves and stuff like that. But, in bits and pieces, in spurts here and there, it's fun for the most part when they've been doing more serious stuff. He's just been the guy on the side, and whenever he would get involved, it's just so he could take a loss for the team. Otherwise, he's just been there to be, you know, an annoyance and just, you know, be there for you know, just to be there. This is him with more of a spotlight because of the story that they're telling, which is, you know, buying time. You know, if it just feels like this is likely biding time until they set up whatever they're going to do at, you know, by the Rumble towards WrestleMania, because I don't think this is going to be like something that's going to have any sort of payoff down the road in WrestleMania. I think this is just to bide time to likely, I'm assuming Edge and Beth Phoenix may be coming back. I don't know about Beth Phoenix necessarily, because I thought it was going to be Beth Phoenix and Rhea Ripley were going to face off, but now with the whole Ronda Rousey out of the championship picture and things being realigned, who the hell knows what's going on there. But definitely, you know, I'm assuming Edge will come back for the WrestleMania payday and you know, try to get revenge for the umpteenth time on this team. And eventually you're going to have to go to Dominic and Rey Mysterio in some way, shape, or form. So.
Yeah. We'll see when and where Edge comes back. I know there's reports that he'll be back imminently and on some PLEs coming up. So we'll see where they fit him in. And, I mean, we have the X Factor, which is, does Vince McMahon look at all this and start hinting to Paula Beck, or outright saying to Paula Beck, I don't know if we want to do this. Maybe you want to do this instead. And then Paula Beck's got to be like, all right, you know, I know who the – I always knew who the majority owner was, but now I know you're actually, you know, pushing me in certain directions. So,
well, I mean,
yeah.
On the plus side, it doesn't – I mean, the card that you kind of see develop towards WrestleMania, I don't think is much of a departure from what Vince would do. It's more like how we got there. A lot of the main – you know, and the fact that you're actually not – you know, booking it week to week on the fly with an eye towards where you're going. This is, you know, well, we know where we're going, so how about we craft a story to get there?
No, well put. All right, well, let's pause and introduce ourselves and get on to phone calls and emails. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, January 9th, 2023. And I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter and the website pwtorch.com and a variety of podcasts. Some VIP exclusive, some free, like this one. And I'm joined by Javier Machado, who is a PW Torch contributor, a contributor to our website, and also to our podcast in various formats. Javier, welcome to the co-host chair for the full show tonight.
Thank you for having me on. You've kept me busy for the last few days, yes. Earning my keep, so to speak.
You can have, I don't know, February and March off? No, we don't want you to go away. yes. Very good. So, yeah, we're here talking Raw. We're live streaming at WadeKellerPostShow.com. You can find the live stream link directly to the direct show every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night within about 5 minutes or so after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown end. The link to the specific streams are found in my TV reports at PWTorch.com. So just check on the Keller TV report link and look for that link. That also includes the phone number and the email address, because you can contribute to the show by email or by calling into our switchboard. And speaking of which, our number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And you can also email Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. Of course, you can also download the show afterwards and listen either on our free feed with ads and plugs or with our VIP feed for our VIP members, where the ads and plugs are edited out. Full details on VIP membership and all the perks, including a 30-plus-year library of podcasts, retro radio shows, newsletters, and articles, is available at pwtorch.com/govip. Support us, support our approach to pro wrestling journalism and analysis, and get a lot in return. New content daily that's VIP exclusive, and like I said, unmatched archives, just a crazy deep library of fascinating content. pwtorch.com/govip. All right, so we want to hear from you. If you're listening to the show live, give us a call. When you call, push 1 on your keypad to indicate that you want to be brought onto the show, and you can also email us at WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. As previously mentioned, love to get your opinion on the show or anything on Raw, that is, or on anything we're saying on the show tonight as we continue on. All right, so let's do it. Let's kick things off with William from San Diego, California. William, thanks for calling. How are you doing tonight?
Pretty good. How are you guys doing?
Good. Thanks for asking.
I thought the show was fine, maybe a little bit on the mediocre, uneventful side. And let me know if you guys agree or disagree, but I thought that there was a noticeable lack of star power throughout the show. I Bianca, Becky, and I know Sammy isn't technically a Raw guy, but he's been showing up so often that I think he kind of is one now, just by extension. They Bobby Lashley came back from the suspension, so that's nice. But yeah, I feel like trying to put myself in the shoes of a person who, you know, in Alabama paying $50 or $80 or whatever, being there in attendance, I probably would have been disappointed from some of the absences on tonight's show. What do you guys think?
Yeah, this sort of – Raw felt a bit like a commercial for SmackDown with, you know, the real star power coming from a stripped-down version of the Bloodline and then it being built around the Usos defending the tag titles. It helped that Bobby Lashley came back. Seth in theory had a segment, so that counts for something. But not having a world champion who is at Raw regularly hurts in one way. I'm not saying it's still not worth doing for all the positives of having a unified champion, an undisputed unified championship. But, you know, Reigns is on a more limited schedule than some other people at his level have been. So it did feel stripped down. No Becky. Javier, did that jump out to you? And how do you think they did kind of filling in as best they could? Like you said, the tag turmoil match is one way to fill an hour that you maybe, in Paul Levesque's case, he wishes he didn't have to fill with the talent depth he has.
Yeah, not only that, but also a lot of videos replaying stuff that has happened more than usual. the more of the extreme side, letting you know what's going on, as opposed to, you know, just like, you know, give you a brief refresher, which felt like they were stalling for time. There was no Belair, so no championship there. There was Rollins and Theory, who are, you know, bigger stars on there, didn't have a match. I mentioned that a tag team turmoil match is a sure bet that you're watching a holding pattern show. Having Dolph Ziggler on your show is a marker for the, you know, a lot of stars aren't going to be there or wrestling. It did cross my mind, particularly like around the 10 o'clock, which is I seldom lately have had to. Look at my watch to see, you know, how much is left in the show. And this was one of them because I'm like, you know, wow, there's not really much going on.
I give them credit. I asked you this, but I give them credit for creativity. Like, you know, having Ziggler come out there and be a semi-competitive opponent with some world, you know, some title history to lose to Solo Sikoa, to give Solo a bit of a boost, having the timing of bringing Lashley back and having a development in the MVP situation, having whatever producer got to dress up as Uncle Howdy this week out there to forward the storyline with everything going on there, including Alexa Bliss. And, you know, Bayley added something. Her whole crew was there. You know, Kevin Owens is right there with Seth, I guess, as the top babyface that's, you know, consistent on the male side on this show, and bringing JBL back. When he hasn't been around a lot, you know, you can argue that hurts a show, but there's some star power there. And then, you know, the presence, the aforementioned presence of at least some members of the Bloodline, the Usos and Solo. All of that, I think, added up to a passable use of the talent they had available. And I think they did a good creative job with it. It's sort of like, you know, when you're low on groceries and it's dinner time and it's like, you kind of throw some things together, some leftovers, mix with something in the freezer, something in the cupboard you forgot about. You're like, oh, this is actually pretty decent. I mean, not, you know, I'm going to eat better in 2 days after a grocery shop, but this was pretty good. And that's kind of the feeling I had watching this show. I think they did a pretty good job with the ingredients that they had to work with. The downside is this is the road to WrestleMania, and Kevin Patrick opened the show saying this is a good time to be a WWE fan, and at least he didn't say part of the WWE universe. And if it is, you know, you kind of want a sense that bigger things are happening only a couple weeks off from the Rumble here. So that's the downside, is this is the season when things are supposed to be really heating up, and I just don't know what kind of cards they can play to make it feel like it's getting heated up. So that's the downside, but I think they scrounged together a good meal out of limited ingredients, so to speak.
Yeah, and there was a lot of, you know, sprinkled throughout the show, you know, mentioning I'm going to be in the Rumble kind of thing, and they did it in a nice way, because normally it's like they set up a skit that's obvious for the wrestler involved to say I'm going to be in the Rumble. And they've been a lot more circumspect about that, you know, where they mention, you know, hey, you know, it'd be interesting, you know, if I'm in the Rumble this year, then this is what I'm planning on doing. That sort of conversation where it feels more natural as opposed to, like, it's obviously a skit to say that I'm going to be in the Rumble. I kind of like that, you know, for example, the interaction between Rhea Ripley and Candice LeRae, that kind of thing. It felt more natural as opposed to, you know, being just, you know, force-fed, you know, well, I'm going to beat you, but this time, at the, you know, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. All right, cool. We'll go back to William. Anything else you want to bring up?
Going back to the main event, you know, it might just be a thing based on the circumstances of the match, but it seemed like Alpha Academy were playing more face-ish tonight, and
they
could go back to, you know, being full on heels next week or whatever, but I really like that dynamic for them. I think Otis has always been a pretty likable, goofy, sympathetic babyface, and I think the crowds missed having that side of Otis, and I know Gable has had some missed runs as babyface, but I think there's still a lot of potential there. So I don't know. Do you think there's a direction that they're going to head into, or, you know, will we be back to status quo heel Alpha Academy next week?
When someone is pushed less than you want, or they're losing more than you think they should, one of the ways in pro wrestling to get them heated up and more relevant again is turning them, whether it's a face turn or a heel turn. And, you know, Gable and Otis are really talented. I know Jason Powell pushes, you know, Gable should be pushed more. He's too talented, and he's being defined down. Is it too late, Javier? Could Gable and Otis both turn, become a babyface tag team, or one of them turn face, and get more out of them at a higher level?
I would never say no. You can repackage people. I mean, we've seen wrestlers go, you know, usually requires changing companies, but, you know, Aldo Montoya went to be just incredible. So, you know, so you could, you know, rebuild and stuff, probably it'll be a little bit harder, in the same company, but I think that the average WWE fan is a lot more forgiving about that, and some of the hardcores are more like, well, it's the WWE. I mean, granted, this was more in Vince McMahon's time. You know, this is WWE, they're not using them right, and then when they go somewhere else, oh, you know, we're still going to stick with them because we're going to see them used right. I think people are going to be forgiving when they put the Hurt Business back together of Benjamin and Cedric. And, you know, and I thought they got, they looked, you know, they gave them, you know, more than, they gave them a good, you know, look at, during the match. Plus you had the main event thing with Cedric, where, almost felt like he was retiring and they were getting a cheer for, you know, all the years of, good work. So it looks like they're trying to, you know, change the perception of them a little bit. So, you know, they could be a serious team by putting them back together with Lashley. And you know what? You could buy that because they were a dominant force when they were together, and you could just sell it as when we came apart, we didn't have what linked us together that made us stronger. So, you know, so that's one way you can actually elevate a talent. What you do with Otis and Gable, I think it's doable. I just don't know how, whether you could do it with them together, you know, maybe become a babyface tag team in the, you know, and then, you know, and sort of follow almost the same path as Sami Zayn. Because, I mean, Sami Zayn is somebody who was also mired in that kind of situation where he was just essentially a goofy comedy act.
Yeah, yeah.
Who was wrestling...
Neurotic and not to be taken seriously.
Yeah, and he wrestled this guy, Jackass, last year. And
Logan Paul.
And now he's like one of the, you know, one of the, I think, top three or four to win the Rumble, to challenge Roman.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, you have callers here saying that, oh, I hope that Sami Zayn is the one who dethrones them. I mean, that's, you know, that you could recover. That's basically a long-winded way of saying that, yes, you could recover.
Yes, yes. Very good. William, how about what else?
More on the absences tonight. How do you think they handled the absence of Becky Lynch? Because I don't think they gave, like, unless I missed something, I don't think they gave a reason as to why she was missing. And I don't think they even, like, said if she was, like, even in the arena or not. I know that from social media, I think she posted something about, you know, being, I think she was on set for, doing another episode of Young Rock or something. So that may be it. But, yeah, just tonight, it seemed like... if you're watching, the way they had Damage Control beat Mia Yim, you were kind of hoping or wanting Becky to come out and do something about it, you know, have her back like Mia Yim had hers last week. And for them to not explain, like, oh, man, well, I think Becky would have liked to have been here, but she couldn't because due to, you know, blah, blah, blah. But they didn't even do that. It just seemed like... you know, maybe just Becky didn't feel like coming out or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about it this weekend, how, you know, important Becky Lynch could seem to Raw and that it isn't quite there yet. And part of it would be being there every week. Part of it would have having, you know, good feuds. Part of it is just kind of the framing of her combined with what they give her to do and then her performance on the mic and in the ring. But missing a week like this, you know, when, I don't know, it does hurt some momentum, but then again, there's, if you don't have a lot to do, then if you're a big star, as Roman has shown, being away sometimes can make coming back be a bigger deal. And this is more for the TV audience that watches every week rather than, you know, the ticket buying fans who, you know, when they bought tickets were thinking they'd see more stars. Javier, your thoughts on any of that?
Yeah, I mean, and considering the fact that it was essentially right after a loss to Bayley, and Bayley playing out. I mean, and she's the heel, and she's playing out. Oh, she's afraid of coming back without having somebody say, "Hey, she's not here because she has other commitments." at the very least, if you don't want to, like, yeah, you know, promote some another show, that's fine. But, you know, she's not here, and she knows that she's not here because she's, you know, got other stuff going on. Without them actually, like, working her out, like, you know, as an injury kind of angle. So I think it was a little bit of a misstep in that respect. But yeah, I mean, her, you know, her presence was definitely missed in the show. So
how much could they be getting out of Becky that they're not, in terms of, it's a show without a world champion and the men's side that is there, and it's an absentee championship. It got won by a SmackDown wrestler. And so, you know, you have Austin Theory and Seth Rollins kind of heading up the men's side and Kevin Owens, you know, doing his thing. Is this an opening for Becky and WWE in general to amplify her and make her the man? First of all, do you think that'd be a good strategy? And second of all, how would you go about doing that? Obviously, being available would be one of the options, but is there something they could just be doing in terms of how they produce her and feature her and talk about her, or is that just not a good choice? They're doing good enough with her right now.
Well, I think if in a different universe where I think you had a better women in better positions, I think you could have her be the standout number one wrestler. Granted, this is not good for Bianca Belair. So, like if they were to embark on a story with Bianca Belair maybe turning heel and then work something with her and Becky, I think that could, you know, basically be the story for Raw. you know, something along those lines, and something very personal with her. And because, I mean, the Bailey Becky angle is the top angle right now in the women's division, over, you know, the Belair Bliss story that's going on. So, you know, yes, you could build around it, but I don't think all the pieces are in place to have that be sustainable. Similar to Charlotte over on SmackDown. Who's Charlotte going to be feuding with for the time being?
William, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of small things that they could do. I mean, even with something like tonight, it's a missed opportunity to, like they usually do with Roman Reigns, if he misses a week or two, they'll make a big deal out of how he'll be back next week or on whatever episode of SmackDown. They'll like advertise it ahead of time and make it seem like a bigger deal. And yeah, I think there's some missed opportunities there in terms of how they, you know, treat the star factor that Becky still has. And I think I don't know, since she returned, it just doesn't feel like, maybe they don't want her to overshadow Bianca. They want her to be more like the second, the 2B to her or whatever. And maybe that's why they hesitate a little in how they push her. But yeah, I think I agree with what you guys are saying.
Cool. Is there anything else you want to bring up, William?
Yeah, a final topic, and then I'll let you get to other callers and emailers. I've seen a lot of speculation as to who might be Uncle Howdy, and I think the person that I see most at the top of that list, who people most speculate about, is Bo Dallas. And yeah, how do you guys feel about that? Because the last time we saw him, he was doing the whole B-team thing, and I really had to like think about that for a minute, because I was even like struggling to remember what he was even doing before he got let go. And I don't know, I just feel like how many people would actually connection that Bo Dallas is Bray Wyatt's brother. Like, I don't think they ever really acknowledged that on TV. And this is kind of a bit of an exaggeration maybe, but I feel like it'd almost be like, you know, if R-Truth took like a 2 or 3 year hiatus, and then all of a sudden he was, you know, a character of that kind of caliber or darkness, like an Uncle Howdy, or like if Santino Marella happened to be Uncle Howdy, like if they decided that he was going to be him. I just feel like he was never really taking all that seriously, so for him to come back as that, you know, even if I want to play on the real life family bond between connection between the two of them, it just be kind of weird, and they really have to work on making it seem like a serious deal.
Javier, I'll throw to you for your thoughts on what William brought up, and also what we saw tonight in that realm.
Yeah, I think it's very likely Bo Dallas. I mean, it just the reveal has to be either someone that that we're going to say, oh, awesome, you know, like in terms of like, you know, someone with some star power or someone who has a personal, you know, issue with him, and what better personal issue than his, you know, real life brother. How you handle the Bo Dallas thing, you can do it. It requires, I mean, and they've been kind of masters of it, because I've mentioned a lot of times that the Fiend storyline was kind of, you know, both touched upon real life and meta also. So you could, you know, It'd be tough to thread that needle where Bo can blame his, you know, essentially what was his run at a low card position on his brother, and that's why he wants to get revenge. You could do that exactly how, I don't know, because, you know, without actually referring to, like, you know, oh, it's his fault because he's, you know, like had management's ear and that's why he wasn't getting booked. So you don't want to go that meta. But, you know, I have faith that they'll come up with a good reason. But maybe you don't really need to if the transformation from B-Team Bo Dallas is so complete that you're not going to necessarily start questioning and basically take it as, you know, okay, so this is not Bo Dallas. This is Taylor Rotunda. Is that his name?
I don't think so, but now I can't remember. Do you remember, William? Let me look it up here.
I'm not real sure.
Oh, it is Taylor. Yeah, Taylor. Okay. Michael. I don't know why. I didn't think that. Yeah, good job.
So you know, I mean, and obviously not necessarily you use something like, you know, similar that you know kind of thing, and kind of divest Bo Dallas from being Uncle Howdy kind of thing, similar how like we never referred to Isaac Yankum as Kane.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yes. I do hope someday we find out, you know, who all has gotten the honor of playing Uncle Howdy these weeks. I assume they're passing the outfit around. I don't know that. I just know that they're
not. I mean, if it is, it's a possibility that it was him today because I heard reports that he was backstage.
Yeah, but they had been keeping quiet who was playing the part prior. So, and it certainly doesn't have to be him playing the part as long as he doesn't look remarkably different or have obviously different movements week to week. Like if Vince McMahon came out as Uncle Howdy, we'd all pick up on it pretty quick.
Yeah.
Don't rule that out, people. Don't rule out that he ends up being Uncle.
Yeah, I mean, I'm having flashbacks to the greater power.
Oh, yes. All right.
See you, Bray.
William, anything else first?
No, that's all I had. Thanks for the call. Have a good one.
Cool, thanks. I don't know if everybody's watching the college championship game tonight or what, Javier, but we're low on calls. Maybe just, you know, low star power show or whatever. But that was, spoiler alert, that was a...
or maybe people are really sick and tired of me this week.
Quite the blowout. No, it's definitely not that.
I'm being self-effacing. Is that the...
Self-deprecating?
Self-deprecating, that's the one, yeah.
So, yeah, give us a call if you're listening to us live here. 347-215-8558. 347-215-8558. And push 1 on your keypad if you want to be on the show. I'll jump to an email here on a topic that we're just talking about. If I can – oh, my tab has gone awry. There we are. So Zach in Texas said, Becky Lynch being off filming meant Raw was already severely lacking. Alexa Bliss being dragged further back into the Brayverse is just sad. Alexa deserves better than that. It may not even matter, though. Nothing that happened on Raw tonight may matter if Vince sees his creative control back. Based on information that came out over the weekend, Vince wanted to retake creative control from Hunter as part of his coup, and the only thing stopping him right now is a verbal agreement. We know we can't believe a word Vince says, even if his tongue were notarized. It's only a matter of time, then, before we're back to seeing 24/7 skits and 6 non-finishes the show. I guess we better enjoy what's left of the Triple H era while we can. This kind of transitions from... some of our main topics we've been talking about, Becky Lynch, and then lately the Alexa thing, but also Vince and Javier. I haven't gotten your latest take on things here. We ran a poll on pwtorch.com asking people what they thought, and it was not great in our poll results. I'm going to bring up the latest results here, but go ahead and tell me your kind of take on things right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of wait and see and hold your breath and hope that he's being truthful and realize and then wait until I'm definitely in the denial phase right now, Wade. Definitely there. So. Best case scenario, he sells it really quick, and it's not to somebody who's going to keep him on board. That would be, for me, the best case scenario. What's your take of him, like, really being interested in selling before the actual TV contracts come due? Because it seems to me that maybe, not a lack of confidence of the actual TV deal going up.
I think the logic made sense to me, which is if we make a TV deal with an entity that isn't the entity buying us, that could hurt. That it would make it just be weird, you know, if Disney bought them but they struck a renewal deal with NBC Universal or whatever the example was. I mean, it makes sense that you wouldn't do that. So
yeah,
I
that makes
I,
sense.
You know,
okay.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think much deeper than that. I don't. I don't think there's a lack of confidence they're going to get a great deal. I think they just, I mean, they've been right and they've been wrong about the landscape of TV. And so, you know, I don't think they know for sure, you know, and I mean, it would make sense for them to be a little nervous, but I mean, they're going to do just fine. You know, I mean, it's a bunch of super rich people trying to decide exactly how much richer they're going to get. And I just don't care that much about it. I mean, it's like, it's at a scale where they're going to be in business no matter what happens. This isn't like, you know, other, you know, Jim Crockett Jr. and is he going to survive or Bill Watts? You know, it's like, come on. I mean, we can sit here and act like it's a big deal, but it makes no difference to wrestling fans. Ultimately, they're going to get a bunch of money and some rich people are going to get richer. And it's going to be a matter of degree how much richer they get and people getting all worked up about the business side of it. I mean, I get it. It's, you know, it's sort of like you're a fan of billionaires keeping score with how rich they're getting. But I don't get all that excited about it because it's not actually going to affect ultimately the product fans see or the survival of WWE.
Well, with the exception, because there will be it depends because there is a who buys it because of how they run their creative content. Is it going to be a company that is going to purchase a company that's been successful and they know what they're doing, or is it a company that's going to buy it and say, hey, they got something here, but we can make it better, and then they're going to fiddle and not really know what they're doing. So there is that concern depending on who, you know, where it goes. So, you know, I just don't know all the players necessarily involved. There are obviously some players I'm like, I'm not really too thrilled with this if this company still buys it, but, you know.
All right. Let's go back to. Is there anything else you want to say with Zach's email? Like, is this beneath Alexa Bliss? Does she deserve better?
He's gonna have to take it up with her, considering the fact that the Dark Bliss character was her idea before the entire Bray. She got tied into the Bray Wyatt thing. That was something she wanted to do for a while. She's into this kind of character. She's into that. That is the type of character she wants to play. A kind of like evil Harley Quinn kind of deal. She has said on Twitter that and in interviews that it's what appeals to her, and it wasn't and she was very happy when the opportunity to work with Bray Wyatt came about so that she could sink her teeth into that kind of character. So,
yeah.
You know, and she had a great run as the goddess, and I think she had something good going on with the character that she was playing. It just things ended up going awry again because, you know, hey, we have no fans, so we could do real spooky magic tricks and we're going to go set people on fire and, you know, yada, yada, yada. And yeah.
Yep. All right. Up next, let's see here. There we go. Breyer from Council Growth Kansas said, I had a question about Corey Graves. What are your thoughts on his announcing during the tag team turmoil match? I know he's playing his part as a heel, but sometimes, especially like tonight in the closing moments, his announcing can be really over the top and obnoxious. Did Graves go too far? And I assume he's talking about Dominic, but did Graves go too far in his enthusiastic selling of the idea that he's just absolutely been toughened up by prison? And it almost becomes like not tongue in cheek and not even like playfully farcical, but too much. What do you think?
I could see why the thought did cross my mind where you wish someone would say, hey, Corey, lay off the gas a little bit, you know, because, you know, for this time to really get it across to the guys, to the people sitting in the cheap seats. OK, you know, I know that's kind of like the WWE, particularly under Vince McMahon, but, you know, it's the WWE thing, you know, let's make sure we hit something enough times so everyone really knows what's going on. Example in the Bliss thing, which is something they've done a few times in the Wyatt thing, which I think for me is one of the worst things they've done, is when Uncle Howdy comes out and they cut to her looking angry, they cut back to him, then they cut back to her, and then they cut back to him, and they cut back to her, and it goes back and forth a few times, and they let it like instead of they let it sit for too long. Where it feels like, okay, so what are we going to do now? And that's happened a few times also on SmackDown with some of the reveals and stuff where they leave the camera on. They should shut the camera off sooner and then, like, move on to the next thing because you don't want to just have the guy standing there because then you're like, okay, so was something going to happen? And I think that's to, you know, get – in this case with Uncle Howdy thing, is to get her facial reaction that she's upset with the Uncle Howdy character for some reason, particularly since, you know, in the Titan Tron, when they showed the Uncle Howdy, you know, like, video, showed images of her, of the playground, and of her as the Dark Alexa character, and say, do you really think you're in control?
Yeah.
Meaning that her current version, you know, her darkness now that she's saying, oh, I'm in control now, is something that he brought out of her, that he's in control of her, and she's angry about that, which makes me think that she's more likely going to – I was wondering where she would fall, whether allied with or against Bray. It looks like it's more – she's going to end up allied with Bray right now.
Yeah.
Or ultimately.
Yes. Yeah. I thought her acting in standing on the announce desk had a wide range to it. There's times where I was buying it, and there's times where it felt like, this is when I exhale and move my arms out. So part of it is I think she's got to find her voice and get comfortable being settled into a clear, I don't say hierarchy, but what the dynamic's going to be with her character and who she's aligned with. And I think then she'll blossom more because, as you said, she's into this. This is what she wants to do. But if she's not sure where she's going yet, or it's just sort of she's trying to be intentionally ambiguous or show confidence but not enough that it overrides the mind games of Uncle Howdy, all that's going on, and I think it's just it's a challenge for her.
Yeah, I think – one second. I think she started off a little bit weakly, and then I think she got stronger a little bit towards the end. Overall, which, you know, this was a stronger performance. I'm not talking about necessarily the content. Some people might not like the content, but in terms of her performance and her confidence, way stronger than what she had been doing before the stuff. Cause she, you know, like Corey Graves said, she seemed lost, when she was just essentially portraying herself,
yeah.
As opposed to, you know, and so now she actually came out and she's like, you can tell she was in a character. Maybe she hasn't found the character yet. Cause you know, if you've ever watched a pilot movie, by the fifth episode, the people you saw in the pilot movie are completely different from the fifth episode as they find their voice and they find the relations between them.
Totally.
And this felt to me like this is my first time putting on these clothes and seeing, you know, how it comes up. So that's why it didn't really strike me that much as it maybe struck you, but because I kind of expected that in terms of like, you know, this is her saying, okay, this is what we're doing now.
Yep. All right, Wade from New Zealand emailed and said, hey, Wade and Javier, I'm sad to say I think I'm near the breaking point with Bayley. Her speaking skills have already left her, and now it feels like her wrestling skills are following in the same bad direction. I'm a fan of her, so I'm sad about this. A change needs to be made, and soon. So I'll pause there in his email. Do you agree with that, Javier? I'm not super down on her. I'm not high on her. I'm just sort of accepting that this is what we're getting. It just feels kind of like generic obnoxious heel, and she's decent at it, but it's not the Bayley that we were, you know, I think anticipating for a while returning. That's kind of where I am. How about you?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. I do think that some of the stuff they're doing now is a little bit more interesting because it was mentioned on commentary, so I was and I'm like, oh, you know what? They might have a point with this, where it looks like what they're trying to tell is that Becky's kind of gotten into her head because Becky said that you can't win without your goons helping you, and she feels kind of like the way that she's acting is kind of like that's affected her a little bit, and they're playing into that. So that at least has given you something, a little morsel for you to, you know, bite on. Which before it was just like her going through, you know, specific emotions. And I think that when she's being challenged in that way is when she gets better. And I don't think she had been, you know, for a while. So I'm curious what the next step in the Bayley Lynch feud goes, and what their next interaction is going to be like. I'm more interested than I would have been otherwise, just mainly because of that little nugget that they put in my head, the commentary put in my head.
Yeah. Okay. He says, I'm with Javier in the denial zone with Vince McMahon. I can't help but have a sense of impending doom. He also said, JBL, if someone doesn't understand the term channel changing heat, then just have them watch these JBL promos and they'll quickly learn. I just, like, sort of roll my eyes at him, like, saying snowflakes and woke, because he says it with, like, this, oh, I'm so funny. I'm so going to get under your skin with this. And it's like, no, it's just like these sad, tired, you know, buzzwords that 5 years ago were so overused. Now you're, the joke's on you because you think it stings or you think it's some sort of thing. And using it, you know, on a Birmingham, Alabama audience, it's just like, it's, I mean, there's blue cities and red states and all that, but it's like, save it for when there's like some sort of connection between the town you're in and how people perceive it. It's just more than that too. Baron Corbin and JBL have no chemistry. There's never been a convincing moment where Baron Corbin made me believe that he looks up to JBL for career advice or that they spend any time talking outside of when the camera is on and they're out at the ring. So yeah, just a lot of things working against it. I'm with Wade on this one. It is, channel changing heat. I found JBL entertaining over the years. It's been a while. And this is not in that, in the category of good JBL eras.
Yeah. I mean, he used to be a caricature and now he's a character of a character. and that was kind of like, I'm kind of there. And the weird thing about the thing about JBL and Corbin, it's almost like a movie where you know that the actors were never in the same room at the same time.
Yes, yes, totally.
And that kind of is what it feels like. So, and not only at the same time, it was like, oh, what was the movie that they reshot? They reshot a movie a character all their entire role because the person playing the character got wrapped up, I think, in the Me Too movement, maybe, and they actually like refilmed all that character scenes. Sliced it into the movie. I think it might have been the Batista movie that Zack Snyder did. I think that might have been the one with the zombies. At least in that one, it actually kind of worked. It was okay. But it feels like that's what they did. It's like, you know, they took some scenes from one movie and they just slapped them in. Odd. It's weird.
Yeah. He also says, I'm very much enjoying the growth of Austin Theory, Damian Priest, caveat in the ring, not on the mic, and Rhea Ripley. They're all becoming the Sami Zayns of Raw must see. What do you think of Austin Theory, Javier, and what we saw tonight standing opposite of Seth and him being, I mean, from a depth chart standpoint, he's not a mid-card. He's not a comedy guy. He's not a selfie guy. He's a top heel on Raw going into 2023.
Yeah, I mean, who would have called that, Wade?
Yeah, I know. You and I.
Yeah. A quick pat of each other's back there. But yeah, I mean, it's nice to see. I mean, it's nice to see. And I like that segment. You know, Seth Rollins is a big charisma and he has presence and he has the experience and he has the time and he didn't wilt towards that. I don't know if he's necessary. Do you think he's playing for the what chance?
I don't think anybody is, but I think sometimes you just, you know, you sort of resign yourself, but I don't think anybody actually wants that.
Okay.
What makes you think he was or is?
It's recurring. And I would think that he would swap, his cadence. And it almost kind of feels like, when they start doing it, he kind of plays into it so he could just say, you know, shut it up. And because then, like, you know, when the rest of the conversation between him and Seth went, there was a group who's trying to chant what. You could kind of hear them in the background who's trying to, you know, those pricks. If you do this, you're a prick. And I'm watching my mouth because this I would be using a lot stronger language in this, who basically just trying to say it, to say it, even though you're not trying to fit into the cadence. And they started doing that, but you know, so he did a little bit, and then he changed his cadence after that. So that was just why it feels like, you know, because like it always happens at least once in a show, and then you also had, you know, like the fact that he was involved with the Stone Cold stuff. Now it looks like, I mean, he's champ is here, man. He said the champ is here, and you know,
yeah,
like,
oh, totally, more every week. Every week that's his thing.
I'm like, I cannot wait. It's kind of weird to say. I cannot wait to see a confrontation between him and John Cena. That's just odd for me to say it.
All right. Also, if Montez keeps bulking up and Angelo keeps slimming down, those two will soon meet in the middle with body types. You know, as a guy who's, you know, typing up reports on them and trying to keep track of who's in the ring, and sometimes I'm, you know, looking at my computer screen and not staring at the TV screen, I look, oh, there's Ford. Oh, no, wait, that's Dawkins. Like, they are harder to tell apart now. Yeah, Montez, I mean, you know, there was a stretch a year or two ago when we were talking about Montez being a future star, and it cooled off a little bit. He had the injury hiatus and all that. But, you know, we see what has happened with Austin Theory is, and this isn't exactly Wade's question, but if Montez is Montez still showing signs to you, or did he ever, of being somebody who could be a rising star of 2023, like Austin Theory was in 2022, a rising star in that they get a push and it's effective and they look like they belong? And I mean, of course, singles, not tag, because he's already a star in the tag division.
Basically, you're saying, can he be a top star in 2023? Is that what you said?
A rising star, yeah.
Rising star.
Along the lines of Austin Theory in 2022, yeah.
You can. I mean, if you want to pull that trigger, you can. Otherwise, just, you know, they could be the next guys up after the Usos in the tag team. If you're going to keep them in that realm. If you he's one of the few wrestlers who's for reasons I check his Twitter. And there are a lot of people saying, when are you going to turn heel and leave Dawkins? So people, you know, there are a lot of people who want to see him, you know, strike out on his own. And I think, you know, and Dawkins, not in a Vince McMahon WWE, but in a Triple H WWE, I think he also gets a shot too. Yeah. I mean, I can see that happening, but I'd almost rather keep them together and then have them just sometimes go do on their, you know, like they strike on their own and have just one person be their, you know, their corner guy. I'd rather not see them necessarily break apart. And that way when they need to, you know, work together, they can work together. But I'd like to see them also get involved in singles stuff, just not necessarily break them up, because I think they have good chemistry and they work well together.
Is Montez showing you top guy potential? I mean, are there not that you're willing to bet a lot on it, but are there a lot of positive signs that he could be a centerpiece pay-per-view main event act, or is the body of evidence just not quite there yet?
Some of them have great charisma. I mean, their characters are a little bit over the top, and if you're going to go to, if you're going to go in the route of, like, you know, the upper echelon, I think some of those things have to be toned back. You know, if they do end up breaking up and going on their own thing, they'll likely become different characters. There'll probably be a much bigger demarcation between what they are now.
Yeah.
You know, I could see him wearing a suit and that kind of thing, and you know, and be more like closer to like a Bobby Lashley kind of style. Or even like a Seth Rollins, but without the cackling laugh, you know.
Yeah.
But something along those lines. I could see, you know, I think he will have a bigger change. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's just I kind of like them together, and I kind of want them to have like one really good run. Like, you know, a run where they hold the titles for like a year and are the guys that everybody, you know, tries to beat. Basically what the Usos have been. I'd like for them to have the Uso position for a bit before, or the Uso / New Day position as the top, you know, tag team for a while before you move them on to different things. That's a, you know, personal choice.
Yeah. Yeah. Seth Rollins is 36. Years old, Montez Ford, 32. So, you know, I just kind of like to track that. And a lot of that is bump card and, you know, how long they, you know, wrestlers want to wrestle. But it's kind of weird that in just a few months, like in May, he's going to be 37. And that's an age when people started talking about like Ric Flair being too old to main event, you know, like, you know, who's going to be next? It's like crazy when you think about that, that he's approaching that age, because it's just like the Shield, you know. All right, let's try to get ourselves back on track here. Looks like my internet might have dropped off. Not sure. But we're patching Javier back in.
Hello.
Javier, hey, you're back with us here. Yeah, so I was just saying, as far as Forkle, did you hear me talk about his age?
You started talking about his age, and then you said something about the Shield, and that's kind of...
That's where it dropped out. So, yeah, so, I mean, when you think about the Shield, being now at an age where Ric Flair was when people started going, well, who's going to be the next Ric Flair? You know, when he was in his late 30s, that's where Seth is. That's where Roman and Moxley are. You want to start looking around for who the next people are going to be. And Montez Ford at age 32 is not Austin Theory. Like, you kind of want to go quickly. I'd be fine if they skipped a run of Street Profits being, you know, the Uso main event centerpiece tag team and just went with him if they felt he was ready and they felt that spot was there for him. It's not terrible if they do it. But, you know, you start looking around at NXT and you go, who can they bring in from there? You look at other tag team wrestlers. You know, we talked about Chad Gable or Otis. Can they be reframed like you said Sammy has been and maybe Dominic to a degree? Mostly Sammy was the example there. You know, and even like Bronson Reed, like coming back. What do you think about him, Javier, and his upside, his potential?
Well, I mean, that's why I said selfish win. Bronson Reed, which is a hard name for me to remember because I did not follow him as Bronson Reed, and I just got used to him as Jonah.
Sure. Oh, of course. Yeah, that's funny. That's really funny.
And it was actually kind of neat because commentary on the New Japan Dash actually talked about Jonah and you know Bronson Reed mentioning that he's still part of the Mighty No Neil. That just because he's in the WWE, they said just because he's in the WWE doesn't mean he left the group, which I thought was nice little nod. Interesting interaction there with The Miz. I was actually doing the math and I'm like, he's actually a cheaper date than Dexter Lumis is. You know, consider the fact that he, you know, obviously The Miz paid Jonah to win what he had paid Dex Lumis. So that had to have been a better transaction for him, unless, I like the idea that, you know, of The Miz trying to cozy up to Jonah and then Jonah, I got to go back to Bronson Reed, got to get that in my head, Bronson Reed. And then basically, you know, Bronson Reed just saying that, if you want me there, you got to pay me money. And that's simple. And I'd like to see that someone who's just a mercenary, because I don't think we've seen something like that in the WWE in a while, have we?
No. Uh-uh.
So someone who could be like, the APA, I think that's the last time I remember, you know, that they would be called in for favors and, you know, and someone who's a threat that could be thrown into, good matches and be an actual threat to baby faces, baby faces who in the middle of feud. So you don't have to have the baby face wrestle the heel that he's wrestling kind of thing. And then also like what we were talking about earlier, when like a Johnny Gargano who's injured can hire Jonah to take out Miz.
What is Bronson Reed's upside? Like, I'll say it, best case scenario, Javier, for the next years in WWE. Like, for people who aren't super familiar with him, and you've seen him as Jonah, people have seen his work in NXT, Paula Beck is a fan, let's say Vince McMahon doesn't interfere with that, where do you expect him to land in terms of a spot that he deserves, not just one he gets pushed to? What's a good fit for him over the next couple of years in WWE?
I think he'll likely be... At first blush, like my gut instinct would probably be like around like in the same place where like Gunther is right now, like the IC US title belt, occasionally, you know, going to the main, you know, wrestling for the championship, like Sheamus is right now. I know he's, you know, had a run in as champion too, but I like that level. Like, you know, I don't think he's gonna be like one of the perennial champions, but. You'll see him in Elimination Chamber. that's one of those guys, you know, who's going to be a threat in whenever you have like one of these matches where you have to have six people in, and he's like the big threat that, oh, is it, you know, can he win? You know, something like maybe like a Bobby Lashley kind of scenario.
All right. Wade from New Zealand says a question. Do you have any ideas why when someone challenges Roman, they're challenging for the Unified Championship, but when someone is challenging the Usos, it's for a show-specific title? The commentary team went out of their way to hammer home that the winners of the Turmoil match were going to challenge for the Raw titles. Thanks for your time, gentlemen. Javier.
Interesting. I actually did not pick up on that.
I didn't either. I'm insecure because he's like, oh, the announcers hammered it home. And I don't know what I was doing when they were hammering it home.
Yeah, I mean,
I haven't noticed that before. But
I mean, the thought did cross my mind in respect that there's no SmackDown that Sheamus and the new Brawling Brutes weren't involved. Sheamus and McIntyre. Are there any other SmackDown Viking Raiders? You know, Lotharios. No one for SmackDown was involved. So I was like, oh, that's kind of weird. That's just the Smack, you know, just the WWE. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of, yeah, I mean, it might be laying the groundwork that the winner of, which I think is a good possibility, the winner of the Rumble only gets to choose one of the titles that Roman has.
Yes, yes, I think that's the best theory that I can't come up with a better theory than that. Let me see. What else was I going to bring up just a second ago? And now I can't remember. Was there anything else in your notes on Raw that you want to bring up?
Talk about the Bliss thing. I mean, I have three question marks on this. I don't have an idea what they're going to do with this, but they're revisiting the Ziggler Mustafa Ali thing.
Yes.
This is not going to – I'm hoping this is not a Mustafa Ali heel turn, right?
I mean, it looks
like it's fainted.
I've been an advocate for Mustafa Ali getting a push. I have not been impressed with his acting and mic work backstage throughout this. I don't think it's been good. I don't think this is a good fit for him. It could be that he doesn't know what his direction is, or it could be he's intending to come across – sort of whiny or, you know, just, I don't know, needy. But, you know, I think Ziggler was supposed to be the heel here, you know, picking his singles match over Ali. But I don't think Ali came across great just being like, well, what about us? It's like, well, you're not best pals, and he screwed you over before. Why are you so desperate to team with him now? Go find a partner. I don't think he's been written well, but I don't think he's acting well. And I can't rule out that they're heading towards a heel turn because – He's not being booked in a super sympathetic way, but my guess would be they're not, and it's unintentional.
Yeah, and it also feels like we're missing pieces of the storyline too, because interestingly, in like the way that they told it, that they actually backfilled it in the conversation that we're having, like as an exposition dump. That we talked about this earlier, and I understand that why you did what you did, and so now we're friendly, but now you're screwing me. It's like it was like a chapter that we missed, and we were just filled in exposition. So,
yeah,
and,
yeah.
And just, this, you know, and that's the thing, it's just like, it's weird. Cause, it's that thing of turning back and forth. I think it's bad for particularly for Ali right now to, you know, continuously change it back and forth. And I'm also not, and if there is a heel turn either way, I'm not really excited for Dolph Ziggler versus, Ali. Either.
Nobody. It's not that it'd be a bad match, but it doesn't feel the least bit relevant. And that was actually the question I was going to ask you, is did Ziggler last too long with Solo Sikoa? Is Solo taking too long to beat his opponents, or was 11 minutes commercial break in the middle about right? I think they're at risk of hurting Solo's mystique, but I think they're just feeling like he's got to go out there and beat some people who count, but not bury them. And so I understand the logic of it. Plus, they just have TV time to fill. And sometimes matches are longer because I think they're just trying to fill TV time. What do you think?
Well, I mean, with Ziggler, it's fine because Ziggler is a veteran and he's young. So I would rather – the problem is that they just essentially went out there and had a WWE-style match without working the story. You know, it felt like they could have worked more of the story that it was immaturity in terms of like not being mature, like how they were portraying Austin Theory for a while, but his, you know, lack of experience. That cost him. And there was one spot, which was when he had him up for the Samoan drop, and then Ziggler just hit this zigzag. Because he took too long, and that was like, you know, the veteran, the KG veteran trying to win here. So I was kind of fine with that. I mean, you see that in New Japan all the time because of, you know, they pay more attention to that. I kind of wish they had emphasized that a little bit more, particularly in commentary. You know, outside of the platitude that, oh, he's a former WWE champion, you know, kind of stuff that they usually do. You know, and going back to the one that he had with Ezekiel's brother, Elias. Mm-hmm. That one, again, the same thing. That one I think would have been fine being more 50-50 had it been more, because since it was a weapons match, had the weapons been more of a focus early on, so to give Elias an unfair advantage, so to give, have him be on top and force, Sokoa, I probably would have had him not use weapons at all in that match and still beat him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At the end, have him get beat up with the weapons, but he never touches the weapons, and then he ends up beating him. And then in this one, similar one. So yeah, I'm fine that he's taking a long time, because you're trying to not say that he's a killer, because if you do, then you run the risk of having people expect him to be up against Roman too soon. And why would Roman have someone this crazy, nuts, in his inner circle? That would be someone he'd start doubting. And I don't think you want to do that right now when you're dealing with, other stuff, and you don't want to start playing with that idea yet. So in this case, he's like, he is still a rookie. He has all these upsides, and, he's going to get there. So I'm kind of fine with that. Unless your goal is to, he's going to be the champion next year, the person to dethrone Roman Reigns. If that was the plan, then yeah, this is completely not.
Yeah. What do you think of the job Kevin Patrick is doing? Where are you on this?
Yeah. I don't hate him.
Mm-hmm.
But he has... I would have to actually be watching it so I could actually point it out, but there's something he does on commentator where he'll say a word and he'll emphasize it, but it'll sound phony. Almost like if you're watching, almost if you listen to the commentary on the actual video game and he's just in a sound booth recording his lines as opposed to, actually really reacting,
Right. That's a common problem. Thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was my problem, because I had stopped watching wrestling for a while, and a couple things brought me back. It was World Culture and some other stuff. But one of the other things was I for a lark downloaded the WWE 2K game, and was listening to the commentary. And then when I got back to WWE, I was like, man, the commentary is kind of stilted and kind of it's programs there'll be a moment where they'll tell you something about the person's life history to make it seem like it's, real. And then I started listening to Cole and it sounded just the same. And I'm like, oh my God, what's going on here? It got a lot better.
That's creepy. Yeah.
It's got a lot better. So, and Cole's gotten a lot better where it feels more, a lot more natural. And it doesn't feel like, every now and then they'll press a button and it goes, now I got to say this. Kevin Patrick kind of feels like he's on that. Again, not horrible. I know he's a robot, but I think Tom Phillips was of the people, I liked him
the
best.
Of the robots.
And granted, it's because I'm assuming that you would have the NXT Tom Phillips, not the WWE Tom Phillips, who was, having Vince yelling
right,
in his ear.
Right, right, yeah.
So, the NXT Tom Phillips with Corey Graves, where they had a nouveau gorilla, Bobby Heenan kind of relationship back and forth, which I really enjoyed. Cause it was they were pastiche copies of them, but they kind of had the same, would you stop that?
Yeah.
And he would hit him back. I love that in NXT. And I think that was one of my favorite things that got me into NXT at the time. Not that I want to see, Tom Hannafin leaving, which is Tom Phillips, leaving Impact. Cause, he's made commentary there a lot more tolerable.
All right. My final topic, unless you have more, is just the Bobby Lashley MVP segment. I think we've alluded to it in passing that Lashley was back when we're talking about star power. Where do you think this is going and how do you think they've handled it so far?
Yeah. I mean, it looks like it's going to be a reunion between the, a reunion of the, Hurt Business. They could always pull a swerve and it'd be, but I trusting not because it's been a lot of, buzz about Hurt Business getting back together. Particularly, and then with, like I mentioned, Shelton Benjamin and in his moment in Main Event, which got some play. It was mentioned by the the on-site correspondent, I think, mentioned it, right?
Yes.
And then after that, I saw it in social media and in articles talking about that, which tells me that word went out to get this out, that, you know, Shelton Benjamin is, you know, people are cheering Shelton Benjamin.
Yeah.
Cedric Alexander, all you need to do is give him a good, you know, let him go out there and wrestle, and people are going to, you know, fall in love with him, because I've loved his matches. To Tim, he's like on par with me and with Gable.
But don't let him talk.
Yeah, but if you're in a faction with three people with MVP, you don't really need to say other than, you know,
yeah,
grunt here and there.
Yeah.
Say, you don't have to say more than a few words, but nah, I think in this, like, just shake your head, etc. But yeah, so I mean, I'm thinking that they're going to get together. There's likely going to be some sort of something that's going to trigger this. I DM'd you when I saw the lineup. I'm like, hey, there's a good shot that they might win.
Yeah,
because
I was not nodding along. I didn't think so.
Well, I mean, I thought there was an off chance, because I thought that if they go up against the Bloodline and then interference happens and then Lashley makes the save, you know, being the impetus for Lashley to get together with them, you know, and ultimately accepting them. I thought that might have ended up being what they would have done. You know, it wasn't. So I'm assuming they're going to get together in a different sort of way. And I did like the fact that MVP, you know, you talked about their history, so they didn't ignore it.
Yeah, yep. I thought that was handled well. There was actually some human nuance to it, how people would react in that situation.
Exactly. And then how Lashley's not convinced, and and MVP left the door open.
Yeah.
You know, so I like that. I mean, there's likely going to be something that's going to happen that either Cedric and Shelton either comes to Lashley's aid, or Lashley ends up coming to the aid of the other two. So something's likely going to happen. I just don't know right now how it's going to play off. You know, or maybe this all happens behind closed doors and we find out that they're together at the Rumble and they start working together as a three-unit team during the Rumble. So,
all right, very good. Javier, thank you. Been fun talking about tonight.
Yeah, I don't think I have anything else. One of the email, the caller of emails mentioned the thing, and mentioned the Mia Yim Meacham thing.
Yeah.
And two things, like there was the Rhea Ripley. Well, actually, more than two things. You have Emma. You had Candice LeRae. I'm pretty sure I'm forgetting somebody else. And Mia Yim / Meacham, who've come in and they've lost quite a bit. And it seems like they're I'm guessing at this point their position is just to be the person to get other people over.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, that seems like what their role is. Cause I mean, particularly surprised with Candice LeRae has been, you know, has not been having a good time with her win loss records over on the main roster.
Well, we're going to continue to hear more about Vince McMahon's influence or lack thereof on creative. And we're going to continue to look at, you know, what happened with LA Knight. You know, just whatever. There's, you know, people who are gone, we're going to think, oh, they're gone because Vince McMahon is down on them, or Paulovic's trying to hide them for now so Vince doesn't know they're getting a push. But LA Knight was like that first guy who Vince didn't get. He's done with the Maximum L models. And then Vince resigns. The next thing you know, LA Knight gets rebranded, recast, and pushed. So we'll see how that plays out, and a variety of other people who have shown up since Vince wasn't around. You know, if he appears on TV again, does he reach into a trash can and pull out the 24/7 title? Even though it didn't land in there. Sorry, I shouldn't end on that note because we are all in denial.
And you know, maybe. And like Nikki Cross will never be seen again, even though we've been seeing her here and there.
Yeah, she was on a reflection tonight.
Yeah, she's been getting little cameos.
I teased this earlier and didn't get to it. In the poll, how do you feel about Vince McMahon returning himself to power? And 74% very negative, 13% somewhat negative. So you're at 87% thumbs down, 6% are neutral, 2% somewhat positive, 5% very positive. So not good.
So you're saying that 5% of the Torch voters are liars?
Honestly, there probably are genuinely 1 out of 20 WWE fans who like it. Oh, I know you are, but I'm just saying it's not like nobody thinks this is good. But someone said I put somewhat negative. Good for the overall business, but stay out of booking and keep the headset off. Well, good luck with that.
I almost never ever vote on one of the extremes on one of these things, and I would vote for the you know very negative for me.
Yeah.
The best case scenario is the rich billionaires they play by different rules, so they might not be paying. You know, they're not going to. They're likely doing everything that Vince McMahon did, so they don't care. If they're not paying attention and they believe in the legend of Vince McMahon, that's the only value that I can see in selling is the legend of Vince McMahon or people who already had a prior, experience with Vince McMahon, like say they sell to the Saudis, that kind of thing. That's the only plus side I see in terms of like, why you someone on the street would want him on there. Outside of that, I think everything else is too much of a headache, and I'm more dreading like the more leaks and stuff that are going to come out because the people unless they've given up, I'm pretty sure they're going to go after Vince McMahon hard and heavy.
Yes. Oh, it's going to be an interesting story. I'm
interesting as in the proverb, may you live in interesting time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right, Javier. Thanks.
Thanks for having me on, Wade.
Absolutely.
Been a busy week so I've been all over the place. If you haven't had enough of me, I was on with Greg Parks where we talked in depth on the Vince McMahon thing, went over, the New Japan, Wrestle Kingdom, Night One show, and I touched on a little bit on the New Year's Dash show and some of the stuff that's happening in the future, and we also gave a preview for Impact. I was rather impressed with myself considering the fact I have not seen any Impact since December, and I kind of knew the story for all the for most of the card, with the exception of, like, the tag team, but I could figure that one because it's a four-way.
It's not like you just said June. I mean, it was just last month.
Yeah, well, I mean, early last month.
But still. Yeah.
And granted, they also had, I think, the throwback show that they do, which I love. Guilty pleasure of mine. And then usually they take the next week off, so it hasn't been that much. But I was kind of like, oh, look, I kind of knew. I hadn't seen the bully Ray heel turn yet, or not really a turn. He was always lying, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Reveal that he was, he's still fully right.
Yep. All right. Awesome. Thanks everybody for listening, and keep spreading the word about the show, and we'll talk to you next time.
Don't be surprised if you don't hear from me for the rest of the week. My voice is going to be gone by the end of the day. Have a good night.
We'll give you some things to type instead then.
Have a good night.
Take care.